Hi, this is Bill Knauer, and you're listening to Author, where we talk about writing and life. Because what it takes to write the book you want to write is also what it takes to lead the life you want to lead. That's true. Author to Author is brought to you by Author Magazine, the premier free writing magazine on the internet, featuring articles on writing and the writing life, as well as video interviews with best-selling and award-winning authors across the genres. And in fact, today's guest, Connor Habib, is the very feature of that interview. Yes, so if you want to watch it, well, you can go do that too. Yes, you can. So go check it out at authormagazine.org. And we are funded by the good people at the Pacific Northwest Writers Association. They are supporting writers from pen to publication since 1955. Got a good conference coming up in September. So here it is, people. It's coming. Probably can still sign up. I'll be there. I don't know all the teachers who are going. Lots of great teachers. We always get the best. Teachers and agents and editors will all be there. I think you should be there. Go learn about it at pnwa.org. Yeah, so like I said, today, Connor Habib. Wow, what an interesting life this guy has led. We barely even touched on all of it. We talked a lot about, he's a debut novelist, got a new book out. But we talked about a little bit about identity, about genre. And, you know, this is a guy whose story was criticized by his MFA teacher, the one that eventually became this novel. Anyway, this is a guy who has a podcast where he just wants to have great conversations. So, of course, it was a great conversation. Well, anyway, Connor Habib is the host, as I mentioned, of Against Everyone with Connor Habib. He is a author now, a lecturer, and a sex workers' rights advocate. He gives lectures around the world about sexuality, spirituality, pornography, science, and art. He served for 2 years as the elected vice president of the Adult Performer Advocacy Committee and is a member of PEN America. His essays and poetry have appeared in dozens of print and online publications, including CR Fashion Book, The Stranger, Vice, Salon, Slate, and several anthologies, and Hawk Mountain is his debut novel, and wow, what a great conversation. And I'm so glad I get to share it with you. Enjoy. Well, all right, Connor Habib. Connor, welcome to the show.
Hey, how you doing?
Well, I'm okay. You, my friend, I hope you're feeling pretty good. Here it is. Hawk Mountain.
Yeah.
Good book. Now, as of this recording, this dropped a week ago in the US. Is that right? July 5th, I thought. No, it's August. July. God, Maddie, it's August. my mind. Yes, a month ago.
Yeah.
A month ago.
That's what you meant. Yes.
That's what I meant. Weird. Okay. So it's been a month. How you feeling? How's it been going?
Oh, really good. I mean, the US tour was great. I did a little over 2 weeks in the US, and
yeah,
almost all the events were completely packed, which I'm told is nice. Unusual for a debut novelist. And yep. And then came back and I did a bunch of events in Dublin, which were all also packed. And now, like, there's a little bit of a breather. And so, you know, you get into that space where you're like, you know, you get all that rush of like attention, and then you're like, okay, what do I do? You know,
That's right.
So I'm just kind of, you know, and the answer is you rest, but I'm not always capable of doing that. And I have a podcast that, you know, I put out something every week, so I don't really have rest either, but
you look like a guy who rests to me. I don't feel rest off of you at this point in your life.
Yeah.
You've been kind of going and going and going.
Exhausted. Yeah.
So part of the reason your events were packed is because you've written an awesome book, but I suspect also, like you said, you have a podcast. So unlike some debut novelists, you have what we call in the biz a platform. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. When did you start? And I've forgotten it. Remind me, what's the name of the podcast? It's Everyone Against Connor Habib. That's what it is.
No, it's Against Everyone with Connor Habib.
Oh, Against Everyone with Connor. I'm sorry. So Against Everyone. So when did this podcast start?
About 5 years ago. So 5 years and almost 200 episodes ago now. So
that's awesome. And it's been going great. And so what was the inspiration for that?
I mean, that was basically, there were two things. One was that I just kind of was lonely.
I
had all these ideas that I wanted to talk about, and I had lots of friends who were doing interesting things. And so I just started inviting people on to talk about ideas with me. But the idea behind that was, you know, to have sort of big talk instead of small talk, and to really just go for it, you know, which is what I pretty much do on almost every episode, not every single one, but almost everyone, just keep going deeper and deeper and deeper. And then, you know, everybody's like, what are you talking about? And then I sort of pull back.
Well, so big talk. I love it. It's part of the reason I do this show as well. Mm. Define that to me, for me. What does big talk mean to you?
Well, I think it's just like that point where, you know, conversation snaps off and like the topic gets diverted or whatever. Of course, small talk is vital and it's really important. But I found that the stopping point a lot of times was not where I wanted to stop. Right. Like, so, you know, all the questions that people feel uninhibited asking when they're, say, smoking pot or whatever, like,
or in an intimate relationship, maybe, or right? They're feeling.
Yeah. Well, yes. And those, somebody. Exactly. Yeah. Like where people find like the space to actually explore. Those are questions I think we should all be taking on, because they really tell us what it means to be human, but they get kind of downgraded or quarantined into these certain environments where people feel, you know, okay to ask them and usually to sort of laugh about them afterwards. I mean, I do, there's a lot of laughter on the show, but it's like still taking all of that seriously.
You know, I will tell you, Connor, I've reflected on this, but I'm married to the person I am because of the conversation, when I met her when I was 17, I didn't recognize it, but where we could go in conversation, even at that time, young as we were, and probably still shallow in a way as we were, was different than where I had gone. And in retrospect, my conversations with her was what really taught me what I was interested in.
Yeah.
And it's been the most important conversation I've had ongoing for 30 years. So I think I'm all in. I'm in total agreement with you. And I think that it's relevant for writers, because I just wrote a piece about this, that we're social beings first, right? So we've all been at the cocktail party, the brunch, the whatever, and the conversation doesn't go where we want it to go, where we feel unsatisfied. We don't say what we wanted to say, or we thought one thing but said another. And in writing, you really, at least in writing for sure, you're willing to do it in conversation in these formal settings. You can go where you want to go, hopefully. You can take that conversation where you want it to, Does that seem fair?
Yeah. And I think, you know, writing and conversation, they're both free. I mean, they're free in the sense that anybody can, who's able to, it can do it for free, you know, without paying money, but also you can go wherever you want with it, and it can surprise you, and it can have completely unthought of like depths, or it can be boring, or it can be, you know, I mean, it just goes all over the place. And I think that that's, you know, a big connection between the two.
Oh, I've always thought that writing, it was when I understood that the act of writing was a conversation, that the act of writing was a relationship, that I began to really understand it, as opposed to just something I was doing. I was having a relationship with myself and then ultimately with the reader, although I'm not there physically for it, you know, I mean, they finish it. So, all right, Hawk Mountain is your first published novel. Mm-hmm. Is it your first attempted long form piece?
Well, sort of yes and sort of no. I mean, it's the first one that I've finished. I mean, I started writing a novel when I was like 8 years old. Not this one.
Obviously. Yeah. Okay, well, probably not, but
yeah, I'm not like, that would be like even beyond like Donna Tartt, like gaps between books. But I mean, I've started novels like again and again since I was a little kid. So, you know, the closest I came to, you know, finishing something else, I wrote about 200 pages of another novel, but then I just stopped. It wasn't.
How old were you when you wanted it to started do. That one?
What's that?
How old
that
were was, you?
That was probably when I was like in my early 30s.
Okay. Yeah. All right. So you were getting to the age where you actually might write a book, but
right,
didn't happen. But you eventually came to short form stuff. It sounds like short stories, but also essays and you're doing periodicals. When did you start doing that work?
Yeah, I think that that's, I did a lot of that because people actually commissioned me to do that work. So that was probably around 2000 and I don't know. I mean, I wrote 2007 maybe. I wrote an essay about getting beaten up by my ex-boyfriend, and that actually became like a sort of like I don't like a viral kind of hit essay. If you ever did write anything about me, I'd want it to be about love. And in fact, it's still like I still get email about that because Carmen Maria Machado like it in included it. Machado included it in the back of her memoir as an influence on the memoir. And so I think like that moment kind of turned things for me where people started asking me to write essays, and mostly the essays ended up being about that mostly the essays ended up being about sexuality, sex, sex work, that kind of stuff. But I also ended up writing, an essay about my mom dying, and wrote an essay about time, and so on and so forth.
Did you when you wrote the piece, the first piece, was that just something that you had to get out, kind of? What was the impetus behind that?
Yeah, that was, I mean, I was keeping a blog at the time, and my idea with that was just write, write until someone pays you to write, and just put out your own stuff. And so that was, that was how that worked. I had the essay sort of kicking around in me for a long time. And in fact, there's part of that essay where, my the guy that I was with had said to me, like, "Oh, you're just gonna write about this, aren't you?" He said that to me in 2007 and or 2006. Gosh, I can't even remember now, which is actually a really good thing. He was like terrified that I would write about it, that I would sort of turn him into a thing. And that's the sort of final line is like, "No, I won't." And then I did, but because I couldn't have found the words for a long time, and then I did years later.
Was it, I write about my own life. That's sort of what I write about. And I always find it therapeutic in that when I try to make it a story that could be of use to somebody else, like it's not, I don't see this confession. I see it as trying to turn my life into something of value for a person I'll never meet. Does that resonate with you?
I
Or do you
don't
come at
know.
it
I mean,
different?
yeah, I'm not sure I would frame it that way. I think that there's some issue where it's like the whole thing about not thinking about the people that are gonna read it is
Oh,
really
I'm all for that.
important.
I'm all for that.
So finding that tension, but also like everybody's always imagining someone reading what they've written. Even if you're writing your diary, it's always like, there's the big other, sort of that concept from psychoanalysis that someone's looking onto your life and that you're performing for that imagined being. And so, yeah, I mean, and is that you or is that not you? I mean, that's a whole other question. So, yeah.
So, all right. So you're writing these pieces, and I assume you're enjoying doing it, having your, having a voice and communicating on that level with people, right? I'm hoping you're liking it on some level because you kept doing it. Was the idea of a novel always bubbling around? Like, yeah, I'd like to write something in long form. Was that sort of always in your heart?
Yeah, although it sort of showed up and then disappeared. Like I said, I was doing it when I was a kid, but then I went to an MFA program and they really focus on short stories there. So I focused on that, and then I started getting paid to write essays. So, maybe I should write a nonfiction book and so on and so forth. That's sort of breathing in and out. But the truth is, wanting to write a novel was always there. It was just sometimes, suppressed or repressed, But yeah, it was always there.
Were you intimidated by the concept of it, or just didn't have a compelling idea? Because it's a you know because let look if you went to an MFA program, and if you're a literate guy and you like to read, literate person, there is a mystique, I think undeserved, hanging over the novel that can influence our thinking about it. Did that inf affect you at all?
Yeah, like especially in America, right? Like in Ireland, there's not as much of a mystique around writing a book because like everybody writes a book in Ireland. Because I mean, that's part of just the function of it being such a small place. But I mean, I think Did it intimidate me? I think I was always trying to find the right form. You know, we're talking about Hawk Mountain. I wrote it as a short story in that MFA program. And I mean, it was completely different, but the events in the story were the same mostly. But I, you know, I brought it in and one of my fellow students said, "You disgust me." He hated it. And the professor refused to like comment on it, which was
Drives me crazy. Connor. Okay. All right. Yeah. Okay. Okay.
So we can, I know we can pull that apart, but ultimately probably good because that meant that they had no influence on the story.
Right.
And it, you know, and so I just kept thinking about it for almost 15 years. I moved to LA, you know, in 2013 or something like that. And I was like, okay, I, you know, like anybody who lives in LA, you think that the dumbest thing in the world can become a screenplay. And often like Hot Tub Time Machine, you're right. You know,
if it did, why not? Why not?
Exactly. So I was like, gosh, I'm still thinking about that story. So I turned it into a screenplay, which didn't work. You know, and so like it had these two forms that didn't work. And I was like, should I make it a play? What should I do? And then finally, I was just like, just write a novel. And I did. And it took me, I mean, that Hawk Mountain took me about 6 months to write after that.
It did.
And
wow.
You know, and it was, I mean, I had the whole, not all of it, but most of it laid out scene by scene.
Right. So the structure in the screenplay remained largely in place when you wrote the novel.
Yeah. And writing a screenplay is just such a great, for me, I don't know how I'm ever going to write another novel without writing as a screenplay first, because it's, you get interior, exterior, day, night, you get the dialogue, you get, you know, like the tension that you have to hold in a screenplay, and then you get to fill it in as a novelist later. And so I think, you know, it was finding the, it wasn't necessarily intimidated. It was just sort of figuring out if the novel was the right form for it.
Right.
And it was, you know, I mean, just, it was.
Yeah. Well, you have a great voice in this piece. I thought you had great command over, you know, a sentence to sentence storytelling, which is a very different thing. My experience writing screenplays is I was like, I come from prose and I started writing screenplays. I was like, oh, I see. My language doesn't matter really the way I'm used to it mattering when I wrote prose. But now you're back in that form. Essay is different than fiction. So, I mean, even though you would come from an MFA program, did you enjoy the narrative prose exercise of fleshing it out?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, definitely. And it was, you know, some of my, one of the weird things was that that other novel that I wrote about 250 or 200, 250 maybe pages of was very funny. And I would find myself when I'd try writing fiction, it would turn really funny. But when I'd write nonfiction, it was very, very serious. And so I, you know, when I turned to sort of writing the novel, I was like, how do I get that essay voice? Like, how do I get the essayistic voice instead of this sort of funny fiction voice? I'd really like to write one of those funny novels like sooner or later. but it'll be a little while. But I think that it was also like, there's this weird question of voice there where I couldn't access what would have gotten me through this novel until I sat down to start writing it too. And once I did that, it all kind of worked. I think, you know, to answer, you know, you're asking me about like getting into sort of fleshing it out as a fiction writer, as a prose writer. And I think, you know, with the funny stuff, the tendency was to do so much through dialogue. There's tons of dialogue in this book.
Yeah,
of course. But, you know, I think that it was in a sense kind of pulling away from that and leaning more into what the screenplay had offered. All the space around the dialogue that needed to be filled in and colored in, you know? Yeah. And I think that was really helpful.
Yeah. And so you did it in 6 months. The book had been sitting in you and sitting in you and sitting in you, and you told it. And did you, when you think back on that 6 months, is in your memory, is it just like a fever dream, or does it, are there memories of like those hard nights and days where you're like, is this working, or how do you reflect on it?
Yeah, not really. I love writing. I mean, I don't understand when writers say that they don't like it, or they do everything they can to avoid it. I mean, I feel not myself if I'm not doing it. And I, so, you know, I would enter into the process. It was just like, great. Like, thank God. I'm just, my job today is to sit down for 4 hours and just write. And then I'm done and everything else is secondary. Now, of course, I had the podcast run, I had all these other things to run. So there was some stress around the time of it. But even like, I went on vacation to Italy and I was in like, I was in Positano in this like tower above the sea. And like, it was so beautiful and I should have been relaxing, but I was like, I could relax, but actually I'm not, I don't think of myself as a workaholic. I just really enjoy writing and I want to write this here, you know. And there are some bits about Italy in there because I was in Italy while I was writing it. So one of the characters, Livia, is like in and out of Italy, and I was moving all around Italy at the time, like from Venice to Positano to Bologna to Rome. And it just became part of the book because I didn't want to stop writing while I was on vacation.
Ah, Shakespeare said, joy's soul lies in the doing. And I do think that we like to focus on what we like to focus on. I would rather be someone who has something he loves to do than someone who just wants to relax all the time and never has anything they want to actually do with their life. Because I don't think we're here just to sit still.
I mean, I guess being like a professional reader is the closest thing that you can do to being someone who just sort of sleeps all day, you know, or like, I guess someone who like reviews movies or TV or something like that. I mean, and all those things are obviously very active, but like, there isn't really a job that's just sleeping, is there? I mean, there's not really a vocation of just sleeping. So
you could be a professional meditator, maybe.
I guess that's it. Yeah. But like, that. Yeah.
So, all right. So you went out and you had full events, which it's not just unusual for debut authors. It's kind of unusual for a lot of authors. I've interviewed a lot of writers and I've gone, seen them go over to their events afterwards and think, this is a fabulous best-selling author. And there's like 15 people there, you know?
Yeah.
It's just the nature. It's the weird nature of book events, I think, in general. But so you got people, but what was it like? What was the conversation? Speaking of conversation, that's a, you know, unique experience. You probably read some stuff, but then I don't know, maybe you didn't. Most authors do. Then what was the nature of the conversation with the audience?
Yeah, I mean, there were lots of questions about trauma, lots of questions about bullying, because there's a lot of bullying in the book. there were questions about school. I'm trying to think of, like, those were some of the more common ones. A lot of, I mean, the novel is alternately marketed in different places, different ways.
Oh,
so it's literary fiction on most shelves in the US, but it can also find its way into the horror section or the crime section.
Yep.
And here in Ireland and also then in the UK and Australia, it's being marketed more as literary crime or literary horror.
Yeah.
And I mean, I feel comfortable with it being anywhere, really. I feel a little weird about it being on the horror shelf. Sorry, this is answering your question in a way, but
that's okay.
I feel a little bit weird about having been on the horror shelf, not because, I mean, horror is a huge influence on me. And I, a lot of times, call this a horror novel, and it's blurred by Clive Barker and Ramsey Campbell and Brian Evanson, who are all big, you know, horror writers, and Kelly Link, who's written some horror as well. But I think that it, like, if people go to the horror shelf and pick it up, you know, hoping that it'll be like the next person on the shelf, which would be Joe Hill, who's Stephen King's son, probably, like, alphabetically, they're not going to get the same experience. However, if they're open, I think they'll really love it. I feel like, if anything, I want to live up to that genre more than I think I did in the book. But I do think a lot of horror readers have been reading it and loving it. And then, of course, there's literary fiction readers who have just been like, oh, this is great. Yes, there's violence in it and there's something grotesque in it. But that's also in J.M. Coetzee and Joyce Carol Oates and lots of other writers who just fit right onto the...
It's in life.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Hopefully not in anybody's life that's reading this.
Hopefully, but it happens.
But yeah.
Yeah, my first take as soon as I started reading is like, I would put this in literary fiction, regardless of what the events are. But the voice had that, you know, I do squirm a little bit, as, you know, even though that's sort of where I come from. And I feel like there's such judgment over all the different genres. Clearly you don't hold it, and I applaud you for that, but there's a lot of, it should be this way, and this one's better than that, and this one, and I, it kind of drives me crazy. It's more about, I thought what your story about someone who is a fan of horror and going to a horror section, picking it up, says a lot about how we genreify, because it has to do with expectation and what do you think is going to happen when you read a romance novel, a science fiction novel. If I was a huge fantasy novel consumer when I was a teenager, and I had an expectation, and if it didn't meet it, that book went back for the most part. You know what I mean?
Yeah, me too. And I mean, I think that that's just kind of answering your question about like, what was the conversation?
Yeah,
like, a lot of people did ask me these questions about genre. Yep. And some people were like, what is horror? Why did you choose to be influenced by horror when you wrote this? And again, just to say, like, one of the reasons also is like, because a lot of these genres aren't given enough space in the store. So if there is a horror shelf at all, it's very usually very small.
Yeah.
So like, you know, I just had a long conversation about this on, there's a podcast called This Is Horror. And it was like a 2 hour long conversation.
Wow.
And we spent a lot of time talking about like, is this good or is this bad? You know, what are these classifications give to us? And I think that anybody who's into genre is constantly having that kind of, you know, conversation. And I love, and also think we need to do something about it. And I don't know what it is. I'm trying to, I don't exactly know what it is, you know?
It's, it's really a marketing thing. It's because it really evolved from marketing and just an easy way to help people understand what's going to happen. But the fact is, when you sit down and write a book like you've done, if it's, if you're having an authentic expression, I think the genre stuff comes afterwards. You say, okay, I've just written this thing. Now, what can I tell people it is? I would think in general that that is a truer way to create a work than saying, I'm going to write an upmarket contemporary literary novel aimed at women ages 13 to 15. I mean, I just don't think that's a way you can really create something. I don't think, but maybe I'm wrong, but
I'm sure some people do. But I mean, I think also the book itself, like some of the themes of the book, another thing people asked me a lot about was like the sexuality of the characters. And, you know, in this book, I really try to make the sort of, I don't try to make the point, but the book does make the point sort of on its own that, like, sort of nailing people down into these neat categories of who is what and what they desire and what they want and how that should, you know, how that leads to defining people as certain things, whether it's gay or straight or bisexual or whatever, that these labels, which by the way are not, you know, very old, they only date back to the, you know, sort of mid to late 19th century, is like, I think for me, like the challenge of these sort of marketing things is weirdly in a way like embedded in the themes of sexuality and repression in the novel, because they end up being damaging, but also could have been useful at the right moment.
Right.
So it's like, I think that that's, it's like, are we doing more harm than good? Do we need these as a kind of medicine sometimes? Do we, you know, I mean, it's all very confusing.
Hey, I always say, you know, my kids are in the label generation, you know, and I always feel like that's fine, but everyone is bigger than a label. No one can fit in that. Nobody can fit in that box. I can't.
Yeah.
Sorry. It's impossible. Connor, interesting guy. Not surprising for a man who loves conversation. I hope you're proud of this book.
Thanks. I am.
You should be. It's really good stuff. no, seriously, you should be proud of it. I hope there's more in there. Hope there's more stories coming out. I feel like there's got to be. I don't know how
there is. Yeah, there is.
Good.
Yeah.
All right. So I'm not done with you quite yet. What I'd like you to do, you got your thinking cap on. You got your Deus Ex Machina cap on. I want you to answer this question. Finish this sentence. If writing, all the writing you've done in your life has taught you anything, it's taught you what?
Allow yourself to be free in your imagination. I mean, your imagination is capable of producing anything. So allow it the freedom that it's owed.
That is a good answer. That is a good answer. Connor, thank you so much. This was awesome.
Thank you. Yeah, great to talk with you.
Yeah, that was a good answer. I wasn't lying. Got to let your imagination be. Just look at, You are free. We're free, whether we want to admit it or not. The imagination, go anywhere, do anything, dream anything. Just let it. Let it, baby. You know you want to be free. Yes, you want to feel it. Okay, that was a lot of fun. Didn't I promise it? And it was. I want to thank my producer, RJ Jeffries. Thank you, my friend, as always. And to all of you out there, hey, you know, thank you. Thank you for listening in. And go find something you love to do and do it.